Super Gamecast 64, episode 105. Today on the show, we're talking about all the new news that's been happening in the industry, as well as a bunch of different games.
Isn't that a little redundant?
Yeah, news. Well, it could be old news with how often our show is released, but this is Call of Duty stuff. You got a bunch of teasers. With E3 coming up, we're going to get into our predictions, our good old pre-3 episode, the good tradition. Before we get going, somebody do something to this DJ.
DJ got me falling in love tonight.
Yes, he does. Yes. Thanks for listening, guys. That's it for the show. No, Super Gamecast 64, episode 105. We're a video game show. We're also a comedy show. I'm your host, Matt. With me, as always, we got...
It's me. It's Kevin.
I am Tyler, and I am on my phone...
Doing the thing.
Researching facts for you.
Tyler is back in the studio, but more importantly...
Wait, where was I last week?
Because he's back in the saddle again.
I don't know. Where were you? You were doing something. We had young Dan Owen on the show.
We did. You were busy.
Yes, he was preoccupied. But Kevin was even more preoccupied in San Francisco.
That's right.
So before we get...
Birthplace of Rice-A-Roni.
Yeah, well, I think... Is that true?
I don't know. Call it the San Francisco treat. I didn't have it once.
Is there like... Did you see any other people eating Rice-A-Roni?
Nope.
Is this like a stereotype, or is it
probably
a deep cultural thing that just hasn't resurged due to fluctuating food trends?
Look,
in
I
the
gotta
West?
Say, I gotta say, you know, San Francisco is a very progressive culture, and so I expected to see some things that I'm not accustomed to, being from the puritanical Midwest that we currently inhabit. However, I was not expecting to see as many dicks as I did.
Oh, a lot of pee-pee?
A lot of pee-pee.
This is a good point in the show to say that this is an explicit show. Also, I'm just getting a notification here on my phone. Guys, long-time Super Gamecast sponsor has come back from the dead, one could say, to sponsor this very episode immediately upon Kevin mentioning San Francisco and its deep, deep rice history. AllYourRiceNeeds.com hit us back up. They said, guys, for this super exclusive rice-based introduction, we want to sponsor you. So if you guys go to AllYourRiceNeeds.com, enter the promo code EverythingXboxPodcast.
I don't want to mislead our listeners. All Your Rice Needs actually went bankrupt, but they came back as a shell company. WildRiceNeeds.com.
Have they started manufacturing cryptocurrency called rice coins?
Yes.
That's exactly the projection I thought that company was going to go on. Yeah, I'm just now getting another update. It seems that the president of AllYourRiceNeeds.com, Harold Reisman, he's now arrested for frauds because All Your Rice Needs was never a website, and it never will be.
They just ship bags of stones to people. But anyway,
all that empty weight. Continue, San Francisco.
I saw a lot of penises.
back on the topic of content.
No, the first day we showed up, there was a race called Bay to Breakers, which I was not familiar with. But apparently, the locals get blottoed and then run a fun run in costume.
Mm.
Or not, apparently.
Okay.
A lot of dudes. I don't know why that phenomenon occurred, but there were a lot of naked dudes.
What was the dude to chick to dog ratio?
Oh, so many dogs in San Francisco. If you like dogs, that's a place for you, man. Eventually, it's just going to be dogs there.
You just leave and you have a dog now. You didn't even order one, nor did you pick one up, and now there's just 14 dogs.
Even a girl on the plane, like sitting across the aisle from me, had a secret dog.
Just hidden away?
Yeah, because she kept like pulling out this little bowl and like uncollapsing it. It was like silicone, you know, and filling it with water and just like tucking it under her seat, and then she'd bring it back out and it'd be empty, and then like an hour later she'd do it again, and I'm like, what's going on under there?
That's a very well trained dog to not make a peep during the turbulence. How are you sure that was a dog and not literally anything else?
Because 30 minutes till the end of the flight, she pulls the cutest French bulldog out of under her seat and just sits it on her lap, and the laziest thing I've ever seen in the world just sits there. It just sits there.
What if it was a mysterious animal that she bought from a San Francisco cryptozoology store?
Because it was on the way there.
And then she, oh.
She could have bought it in Chicago.
Ah, true. A lot of people don't know that Chicago is like the primary place for cryptozoological animal corpses that you can buy. And then if you get the secret powder and put it in a bowl of water every 20 minutes, it becomes a French bulldog. So it could be a possibility. Also could be coincidence. But I'm glad that you brought up the amount of penises as of recently.
San Francisco is great, by the way.
Tyler burying his head in his hands very early, 5 minutes into the show. We cannot escape the dick. How do you feel about that, Tyler? Tyler's just...
Great, good. Good take. Good
thanks.
Take.
Thanks, Tyler. He doesn't even want to chuckle loud enough for there to be an audible. Okay.
He's shaking so hard, he's completely, like, making the table move at this point. Which is kind of a feat, because it's a very big table.
He's okay, anyways. Penis, dick waving, bridge the gap, transition. Call of Duty Black Ops 4 will have... No, I'm sorry.
Was that
Call,
dick waving?
Yes. Oh, okay. Thank you. Thank you for bridging that for me. I'm glad that you could slam dunk that one could say. As LeBron James has been doing...
He alley-ooped it.
Yeah. The well-known basketball move. So Call of Duty Black Ops 1-1-1-1-1, I think, yeah. Has no campaign. We heard reports of this. We talked about it previously on the show, so we don't have to go too deep into it. But we had heard that there was some single-player content made. There was deadlines that couldn't be met. They got real, real hot on this whole Battle Royale thing. No surprise there.
Ugh.
And now with the official trailer and them coming out and explaining things, yeah, there is no campaign. Let's just real quick. Does anybody... I love Call of Duty campaigns. Specifically, Black Ops 2... had some cool things that Call of Duty hadn't really done before, but how do you guys feel about this in general? I guess a AAA game. It also is important to note that this game is still $60 with a $40 season pass, so there's whatever they're putting in substitution, the Battle Royale mode for the campaign, they must think that it's worth the same amount of money as if they were giving you a single player experience. Generally speaking, how do we feel about this in the Call of Duty sense? I don't really want to get into a whole conversation of whether or not single-player game is still viable, because with God of War, they definitely are. Let's go to Tyler first. Tyler, first and foremost, do you like Call of Duty campaigns?
No.
You barely like shooter campaigns, unless they're really good.
I barely like shooters.
What is a shooter?
Titanfall 2. It's probably the best shooter campaign.
I just started Titanfall 2. How about that? That's so interesting.
You're welcome to the best shooter campaign of the past, like, 5 years, probably.
Did you know that when you have a detail-rich environment and no waypoint, it's really hard to navigate?
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
I'm having a hard time with Chapter 1 of Titanfall 2.
Titanfall 2, I feel like it pushes you in the right ways, but sometimes the maps are big enough in which they kind of encourage the exploration. I'd have to go back and play it again. I don't remember having too much difficulty, but does in the first chapter, I think they start you out in a pretty open kind of area, and then you have to scurry around and find a few people, and there's a lot of like ledge hopping.
That's the thing. It's a game that involves a lot of speed, which requires a lot of area, so that's probably why you're having a little bit of issues.
It's that early part, it was open. But anyways, Titanfall 2. Okay, so Tyler...
I don't like first-person shooter campaigns.
Second question, if you had the option, then would you take a Battle Royale mode? Let's just give them the benefit of the doubt that it'll be okay, at least decent, and updated regularly. Would you take that over a Call of Duty campaign?
If I said no, do I have to explain why?
No.
No.
Because the short and long answer of it is that either you don't like Battle Royale or you don't want to see more Battle Royale, which is both very, very valid opinions. And then Kevin...
I feel like they're getting on the bandwagon way too late. They're pushing out a game that's going to be... Let me preface all this by saying that I have played a lot of the Call of Duty campaigns in the past, and none of them really wet my khakis.
What the fuck?
That's a thing.
I've never heard of that. I don't think...
The only exception being I really liked World at War.
Everyone has their own little favorite.
That one in general was my favorite all across the board. But the thing I always played Call of Duty for was the multiplayer. But I think they have like one of the best progression treadmills of any online multiplayer.
They
game.
Popularized that with Modern Warfare.
Yeah,
that's where you started to see this
and stuff. Uh-huh. It's addictive. It's fun. It's you know.
I will still play it, and I hope it's good. And then roundtable here, Kevin, you can start. Let's just chime in. Do we think that this is a good take? Maybe not necessarily the Battle Royale thing, but removing campaign. We've seen these statistics over the past few years. you know, 2% of players, 5% of players play the first level and they never finish the campaign. And then when things like this happen, where they say it's a short campaign or we're not doing a campaign, people freak out. Generally speaking, do you think this is a good move? And as a secondary question, do we think that people actually care about the campaign as much as they say? Will this affect sales? Kevin, what's your hot take on that?
Personally, I find replayability and extensive play to be worth my money. We were actually just listening to a podcast that you were part of recently, Almost Better Than Silence.
Yes, we'll give them another plug at the end of the show.
Anyway, they were all using the method that I'm very familiar with, in which I compare the amount of money spent to the time spent on the game, and that's a very, very good rubric for me. So I guess what I'm trying to say is multiplayer are usually rich veins for me in terms of my expenditure, but my feelings would be that if you're going to ship a multiplayer-only game, make the price point much lower or free and encourage purchases in the game. So, you know, make it so that you can unlock everything you want by playing, or you can pay a little more. So you support the devs by paying. It's almost a pay-what-you-want model, but you're still getting something tangible in terms of gameplay from it. You know what I mean?
Just don't screw people over with loot boxes. I feel like you wrapped that up very well. And so I want to bounce back, Tyler, with this final question that you might not be able to answer, because who knows? You don't like Battle Royale. You're not a huge fan of campaigns unless they're like really, really good. What would be a mode or something that could draw you back to the Call of Duty franchise, Tyler? It is kind of all meshing together. But if there was a mode or some sort of maybe cooperative something, is there a thing that you can think of that would draw you to Call of Duty, or is it just not your bag?
Well, it's never been my bag, but there are certain things that I used to play Call of Duty for, and that was zombies, and that was...
Which will be included in this, by the way. That is one of the... As always with Black Ops.
I mean, a cooperative effort is far more enticing to me than... a PvP one. Free-for-all is not as fun.
Yep.
Like,
agreed.
If it were
TDM or something like that.
Not even that. More like
Halo.
Siege.
Okay. Yeah. Well, the way I said it is that when I heard they had the single player content that was being kind of like shuffled to the side because it wasn't complete, I looked back to Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 that had the Spec Ops mode, which was a bunch of campaign levels split up, and then you do different objectives with a co-op partner. And I thought that would have been a really cool way to utilize the single-player content. Instead, they are kind of using it as tutorials to show you how to use all the different heroes, from what we understand. But that's kind of the saving grace that I thought would have saved it.
I want to add something. First of all, I like old-school zombies, old-school Call of Duty zombies. I don't like the whole... how robust they've made it. It's a lot more... I kind of just like the mindless, the mindless horde mode, and then you get lucky on the box and get the ray gun and stuff. Like, that was more fun to me than all this other
Zombies
shit.
Zombies has become its own, like, game where there's a lot of meta, and there's a lot...
Yes.
One could argue it's a deeper experience than the single-player campaigns with all the collectibles and stuff like that.
I also wanted to mention that there was a Call of Duty that Tyler really got into.
Which one?
It was Call of Duty Hardline.
That's Battlefield.
I'm sorry, you're right. It was Battlefront. However, the reason he liked it was because you could play as the
operator.
That's right. Okay.
That's the thing he likes to do, is he likes to...
Manage and watch
and assist.
I'm an assist person. That's what I do. I assist.
I would argue you like Battlefield and that style game more because you have that opportunity to play that role.
There's an awful lot of things you can do in Battlefield, like spend your points to get a vehicle or upgrade your weapons or take over certain things, and you get more points by using your points. And the whole system makes sense to me. Also, it's like the first 50v50 that
there was. They really did the 50v50.
Now, I didn't mean to make this Call of Duty versus Battlefront. Or Battlefront.
No,
I'm sorry.
And it's very much going to be that, though, this year, with Battlefield kind of veering into this faux World War II history with, like, the cybernetics and stuff. They're kind of going for this weird futuristic history cross. We'll see how it pans out towards the end of the year. That's about as much as I want to talk about Call of Duty, especially with E3 coming up. I'm sure we're going to have to talk about it.
You know what would be cool?
What would be cool?
Captain America... if it was made by, like, the Battlefield people.
That would be dope as hell.
Would he use his shield and you would throw it, like, a gun?
He still gets a gun.
Oh, he's just Captain America.
You watched Captain America, right?
Yeah.
He gets a gun.
Oh, true.
While he's on the front lines. But, like, if you're going to do World War II with cybernetics, why not Marvel?
So, That would be if you took literally all the gameplay from Battlefront and
made it Marvel
and skinned it as Marvel. You would basically have heroes that run around and just wreck shit.
Yeah.
And
Marvel Heroes Battlefront. You can have Battle that Royale. One.
No,
not
no, no.
EA.
No, 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 no. Not EA.
Please wait.
Yeah, please hold. Don't do that, EA.
No, no, please wait.
Thank you for that, Kevin.
You're welcome.
What Kevin's...
You're welcome.
I want to actually throw that over to Tyler, because at this point, Tyler has... We're moving on from Call of Duty. And moving over to something a little bit more mysterious. By the time that this has aired, you guys know what's going on. We don't know quite yet, so it'll be interesting looking back on it retrospectively. Let's just throw out some predictions here. Kevin, give me that transition one more time.
Please wait.
And Tyler, what...
Please stand by.
That, if you guys know what that is, that's a Fallout reference. And Tyler, can you explain, because at this point... Tyler has literally watched more of this than I have. long story short, Bethesda came out and put a GIF on their Twitter. It's the old "Please stand by" from Fallout, and then started a Twitch stream where there is what, Tyler? What is this Twitch stream?
The "Please stand by" on an old TV with the Vault Boy bobblehead in front of it, and random stuff will happen from time to time. I'm sure it means something if you pay attention to Bethesda, but. I don't know who that guy is with the mug or the guy that pokes his head in.
There's a lot of, like, it's just this live feed from a room, like he explained, and people walk through and signs pop up. Someone came through with a bunch of balloons and then like left one hanging by the camera, which means some people think it is a 21-year anniversary of the first game. A lot of people making these predictions. We know that there's going to be some sort of Fallout news at this point. With E3 coming up and Bethesda having their longest showtime yet, it's bound to be something. Real quick, one from everybody. What if it could be the one thing you want it to be from Bethesda Fallout wise? What would it be? I'll start. Fuck. There's okay. Realistically,
I'll start.
Yeah, you start, Tyler, because it's between two for me, and one of them's just kind of like a halfway.
Fallout New Orleans.
Oh, yeah.
The thing that I teased 2 years ago at this
point. Okay, so if Tyler...
That's what I want. I want to be right.
That was pre-3 last year.
Yeah.
If Tyler leaks the New Orleans stuff a year ago, he's just going to have to be our, like, fortune teller for all pre-3. T-pose.
But the thing is, he doesn't predict the most, like... The most upcoming one?
No, he's predicts like 2 in the future. You have to check with him. It'll happen, Tyler. It'll happen. Like, it's just the question of when it'll happen.
So what we're saying is 3 years from now, Captain America World War II Battlefront yep. will come out. Yep.
Hot yep. on the heels of the Avengers game that is announced at this E3, or that will be updated at this E3. Okay, for me, it was honestly between Fallout New Vegas 2, because I, in part, didn't give the first one a fair shake, and now that I've played 4 and gotten okay with the whole faction in a less... complex way, I'm interested in it. But if I really could have what I wanted, this might seem blasphemous to some people, but I would totally take a full remake of Fallout 1 in Bethesda's engine.
Now, you do know that Fallout 1,
it would be impossible to do as a first person shooter,
is a top down
yes
action RPG.
Yes, I'm just saying Fallout 1 as a first-person shooter, it makes no sense.
Sure, it would
but
be
what if?
Difficult, and it would be super cool, though.
That's what I'm saying. Maybe, we'll see. Unless Kevin is going to go with the predicted option.
I got one. Yeah, it's going to be called Fallout The Exile, okay? And what's going to happen is...
Based on the new Conan Exile.
Yeah, yeah. This guy who was doing research in Greenland decides to come back to his home in the United States and finds out that everything's fucked up, and he's just like, what happened?
He comes home just to complain about how it's all ice, and he didn't get it why it's called Greenland if it's all full of ice.
Yep, and then he's like, wait, where's my wife?
Fallout new wife. Fallout NW, it's just you gotta go to the wasteland, find
new wife,
your wife.
New life.
New wife, new life, new Fallout.
And he's like, what? I need power armor.
Generally speaking... Todd Howard has never steered us wrong.
It's going to be dog meat armor. That's what it's going to be.
There will just be dog meat.
They're taking Fallout 4, and they're just giving Deathclaws armor.
Horse armor for dogs.
No.
Yes. Mud crab armor.
At the very, 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 very least.
Give the mud crab a knife.
This will be a Fallout 3 remake, remaster, even though they kind of did that already on Xbox One, or it'll be a Fallout 4 port for Switch.
Or what they're going to do is they're going to reveal that Fallout, like, gets so mutated and crazy that
it's now called
it loops perfectly into the Elder Scrolls.
It's now called Outfall.
There are dragons.
I know.
Dude, that would be the full... Somebody else threw out the idea, and let's just, just based on reactions here, Fallout Online.
Fallout Morrowind.
No. Okay, Tyler's not in. Fallout Online, Kevin.
Eh.
I played a lot of ESO. I could maybe get behind it.
I just want you to know that the one of the Elder Scrolls' pervasive icons is an Ouroboros, so I could be right about... You know,
the thing about Kevin is that when he makes predictions, it's not 3 years in the future like Tyler. It's actually 25 years in the future.
I'm living in 20.
This guy's in 20, whatever. 2040.
Wow. Yeah.
2048. Did I say 20 years or what did I say? 25.
25?
Okay, I messed up the math for myself there. I didn't have to add that five. Okay, and then moving on to other things that no one really knows what they're going to become yet, but it might be something good, might be something bad. Sea of Thieves. Sea of Thieves got off to a rocky start. A lot of people complained about the lack of content, the lack of progression. But Rare said, we will make good on this. We will give you updates, laid out some plans for some upcoming stuff, and have just released their first big content pack. I believe it's called Sea of Thieves Under the Sea, Hardening of the Something of
it's,
the Sea.
It's actually Sea of Thieves, A Little Mermaid.
Under the sea.
It is called The Hungering Deep.
The Hungering Deep. Kevin.
Yes, sir.
Kevin, you played most Sea of Thieves. Unless, Tyler, did you do a lot of Sea of Thieves?
Hell no.
Okay. I think between the three of us, it was Kevin who did the most.
It was Kevin.
Kevin.
Yes.
What kind of fun things does Rare have for us on this, Tyler? What?
Tell me about your bad game.
Tell me about your horrible. Okay, right, I like railing on Sea of Thieves. My main issues
Everybody
with
does.
It. My main issues with
Get
it.
Get railed.
Were the lack of progression, and that it was only cosmetic, and you couldn't really upgrade your stuff. So from hour one, you still had kind of the same poopy pistol that you did from hour 20. And then maybe it's just me, but I didn't like how the guns worked out. But in opposite to other people, I liked how like the sloop worked, and I liked the more personal kind of journey that Sea of Thieves offers. I like taking in the environment and the atmosphere without everyone yelling in my ear.
I think Tyler doesn't like Sea of Thieves because bandwagons don't float.
Hey, it's nothing but shots fired.
I know, I'm just kidding.
He's saying your game sucks. He's saying your game sucks because you suck. It's all sucking over here, dude. Dicks in the top of the episode, sucking in the 20th minute.
So in Hungry
Sea of Thieves in the
2040 vacuums.
We go full circle.
In the Hungering Deep, players, 100 players start out on a galleon, and they float you to an island.
And they drop off of a parachute. 100 galleons float on... They land in the sea. Wait, but there's a storm coming in.
Uh-huh.
And if you don't get out of the storm, the Kraken's arms come up
again. One of the places you can land is right in a shark's mouth.
Shark's Cove. Or, no, I was trying to think of alliteration.
Punch sharks to death.
No, but really it is very shark-themed.
Okay.
You have to you have to follow a trail of riddles and rumors to piece together what happened to Mary Merrick.
Hmm.
The proud owner of a pair of matching peg legs. If it sounds like I'm reading this, it's because I am.
It's fine.
I'm pulling it straight from their website.
Give them the good info.
Along the way, discover new features like the drum, ship's flags, speaking trumpet for shouting at other pirates.
Fun.
And selectable tattoos and scars for looking good while shouting at other pirates.
Oh.
Basically, what I've seen...
is that as far as like is everything else pretty much balancing?
So,
and
yeah. There's balancing changes. These items are going to be unique to this particular event. They will continue to exist in the game, but you cannot unlock them after this one.
Please continue.
Oh, okay. I lost my train of thought. So you can continue to use these items. However, you cannot unlock them after this event is over. They're all very shark themed. So like the drum is, it's a wooden drum with like a big shark's jaws around it. And
so is this a free content update?
This is a free content.
Oh, okay. For a second, I thought it was like some paid DLC, which would have made me mad.
No.
When you mentioned it being event based, okay.
And they're allowing you to unlock ship flags, so you can fly like the Jolly Roger, and you can unlock other flags and mastheads and things like that. So like, they're expanding the livery, they're expanding a lot of the cosmetic stuff, but they're also giving a storyline to follow.
The storyline, I guess it would depend on how long it is, if it would draw me back. But the one thing, I guess, that remains a problem for me, and unless you can look through those balancing things real quick, they list them, but just the amount of gold you would have to get for any of the collectibles, especially the ship stuff, which is the ship stuff look cool, but you need like 750,000.
So much.
And it's just unrealistic, given the content was repetitive to get that gold. But if the new stuff gives a lot of gold, then I might be interested. But unless and you see anything...
They're implying that there's going to be a new...
There's like, probably new ways to get gold.
There's like a new epic creature to fight. You know how there's the Kraken?
Yeah, maybe it's like...
They're saying that there's a new monstrous peril. I imagine it's going to be a shark.
Could you possibly fight?
The Megalodon.
A bigger shark?
The Megalodon.
The Kraken's not a shark.
But the Megalodon...
I'm just saying there are sharks.
Yeah.
There are sharks, there's a Kraken. What other deep monster could there possibly be?
The Megalodon, which is the biggest shark of all time, and then the giant squid. And then that's where I think that I would run out of things.
The Sharknado. Don't forget the Sharknado.
Sharknado is... That's not exclusively... All right, Sea of Thieves is a water-based game.
So there
Sharknado
are
is water
shark
plus fire.
Water spout, then.
Okay, that's right. Fine. I can get behind it. Sea of Thieves, we'll have to see. Kevin, if you want to play that, let us know how it is. I do not have Game Pass anymore.
I don't play those games alone, so I probably won't play it because nobody plays it anymore.
If Josh has it, I don't know. You'll have to let us know, or we'll just find out via the internet.
Yeah, the other two guys have it.
Moving on to a little bit more annoying news. You know, people like to give Sea of Thieves shit. Even here on the show, we like to give Sea of Thieves shit because it's fun just to jokey joke around. We know they work hard. Let's talk about some people who worked hard at one point and now are trying to salvage their work by demeaning that of others. We're of course talking about the PUBG Corp, a subsidiary of Blue Hole, right? Yeah, Blue Hole Entertainment, popular for PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, are suing Epic Games, the creator of Fortnite, also known as the world's most popular game this year, also known as that game that even people who don't play games know about. And they are suing it for, Kevin, basically, why?
The quote is that they were concerned that Fortnite may be replicating the experience for which PUBG is known.
We talked about this when originally Fortnite came out and did the Battle Royale mode and said, hey, PUBG, we really like your stuff. We're going to try and like improve on it. And PUBG put out this kind of like shitty response saying like we might take legal action. Yep. We're now seeing the ramifications of those. And
here's my primary issue with it.
Yes.
If that's not too bold for me to jump off the bat.
No, Kevin, you go, and then Tyler, I want you to go, because I have things to say about it, but I want you guys to talk a little bit more.
PUBG, as we all know,
yes,
is run on the... It originally was an Arma mod.
Yes.
Okay. It's run on the Unreal Engine.
Correct, which is made by Epic.
Made by Epic.
Correct.
Isn't that kind of biting the hand that feeds?
Yes, and also the point that a lot of people were making about that is that, well, isn't it kind of like on Epic for taking somebody's game that was used in their engine and then stealing it? And that wasn't true either, because they didn't use any of their code, and since they have been using the Unreal Engine on Fortnite and in that specific Battle Royale version, the upgrades they've made to Unreal, the things that they've showed that you can do with it, if anything, help PUBG by showing that these things that you can do within the engine they didn't do in their own game. But they're spinning it.
The only credence I'll give to PUBG calling them out is that Fortnite was never supposed to be Battle Royale.
Oh, yeah. Feel free to call them out. They totally copied you. The question is the legality of that.
Yeah, I don't think there's a case here.
Yeah.
Tyler?
Tyler, what's your overall thought? PUBG. They just don't like the cut of Fortnite's jib. They don't like the way they're taking their idea and doing it. Boy, here, let's just... Tyler doesn't play a whole lot of any of these games. Tyler, who do you think does it better, PUBG or Fortnite?
Fortnite took less of my friends. Fortnite did it better.
There you go. So from Tyler's very, very, very narrow view of the Battle Royale genre... Which should be the only view you need.
View.
Yeah. We're not even talking... It's the pinhole view of it.
We're talking... Yeah.
Fortnite, better. And I'm just gonna...
good. PUBG, bad.
Fortnite, good. PUBG, take friend.
PUBG, have frying pan.
See, that's the thing. Is like PUBG, they've been suing people all over the place. The most recent one that got a lot of press was they were trying to sue another clone of PUBG. And one of their cited sources of copyright infringement was the frying pan, which apparently, according to Blue Hole, aka the PUBG Corp, said that PUBG popularized this as a weapon, and PUBG is the only game
popularized to
have. Yeah, thinking of the millions of games, not millions, but hundreds of games.
Why don't they go go after, like, guns of arms or, like, any number of the exact, like, copies of PUBG.
I think it would be amazing. At this point, the only way that this story could get any more ridiculous is if PUBG sued H1Z1 for copying their idea, which is funny because H1Z1 came out before PUBG. Battle Royale has not been a new idea. PUBG made it popular. And then PUBG stagnated, released a bunch of shitty ports, then went to mobile when they saw Fortnite going mobile, and then lost their whole entire game plan. They tried to popularize the genre and then get people to buy in with loot boxes that weren't good. After already people paying $30, Fortnite said, here's a free game that's good, now you can buy your loot boxes. It becomes more popular because it has a better foundation, has a better marketing strategy. We'll talk about that at the end of the year. It has overall a better presence in the gaming industry. And when it comes down to the legality of it, we can maybe collectively, Tyler can't because he doesn't play, but collectively, I don't think I can name more than three guns in PUBG.
Well, it's because there's only three that count, and it's the... Shit, what's it called?
I don't know. Like, PUBG...
What's the one? What's the sniper?
Car 98?
That's the one.
Okay. I didn't even know that. And here's the thing. PUBG uses real guns.
Yeah.
They use real models. They use these towns that have, like, realistic... You can't... Props to Jim Sterling for bringing this up, but you can't say you have the intellectual property on, like, a standard-looking building and a army plane.
Right.
You can't... If someone were to make a copy of Fortnite and you dropped in onto your Battle Royale in a bus that's lifted up by an air balloon, Epic could then be like, hey, that's stealing our idea. Because it's identifiable. It's a brand. You can't put a plane in your game and then sue Fortnite for having a plane in their game, too.
And it's not like Fortnite took, like, the names of the cities, like...
Yeah,
like
no.
Pesky Pochinki.
It's completely different. It's completely different. It has its own brand.
Yeah.
And
arguably, I would even go so far as to say, as much as I don't enjoy Fortnite, like, playing it, it's done more for the community, I think, than PUBG has. In my experience, I don't know. Again, this is a very limited view, so don't, like, hold me to this. But in my experience, there was a lot more toxicity to PUBG in some ways.
Yep.
There's definitely toxicity in Fortnite. But I don't think... I think you're so far removed from your enemies that it doesn't impact you.
I think Fortnite just has a general feeling of joy.
They got a better grasp on it, too.
And when you play Fortnite, and even if you die and it's unfair, you might get mad, but you end like having a fulfilling experience, whereas PUBG, you just get shot once and then you're pissed and you don't know where it came from.
I will admit, however, I don't get the same rush from Fortnite that I did from PUBG.
That is something that PUBG does better, just due to the inherent realistic nature of the game. But I think that's also a barrier for entry for some people. Same reason, like, I didn't pick up Arma 2 mods when those are super popular, or Days, because I didn't too much in there. Tyler, he's getting a little sleepy. He's getting a little sleepy because we're talking about all these games he doesn't play. And we'll totally get to the game you play, but before we do that, guys...
The game. You're here first.
The game.
Okay. One.
The game that he plays. No, he actually has two this episode.
And, I do?
And I'm very excited to hear about one of them in particular. We'll get to them. Don't you worry, Tyler. First, guys, I'm sorry, but this is no comedy here. We have to talk about this. As always, we are a game/comedy podcast, and some of that stuff has to be information about the games industry, and occasionally that information is a bit sad. Very popular games journalist, esports commentator, games commentator, just all around great persona in the game industry, Total Biscuit has passed away at 33 from bowel cancer, leaving behind a young daughter and wife. Kevin, you've seen a little bit of stuff. Tyler, you weren't as familiar with him. Generally speaking, Total Biscuit was a wholesome guy. I don't want to really compare him to anybody because he had his own shticks, but he was just a good voice. And when he came down with his cancer and he was going through his fight, he was always very, very supported by his fans. He didn't, like, you know, lock himself in a room and self-wallow. He continued his work. He really stood as a survivor and overall a good person. And, you know, he went through the issue and then he went into remission and everyone thought it was going to be okay. And then the cancer came back and he unfortunately passed away just this past week. All I wanted to say about that was that he will be very, very missed. If you enjoyed his content, his wife is going to be continuing it. The Co-Optional podcast specifically, which was a great place for him and his wife to talk about stuff. So she'll be continuing that at his wishes. There is a GoFundMe page set up if you want to support, because like we said, he left behind a wife and a young daughter. That GoFundMe is doing very well, But when anybody in the industry passes, especially somebody who's a journalist, so it's a little bit closer to my side of the field, it does suck. And especially somebody who's so young, had a, you know, he beat cancer, and then for only for it to come back, it's very, very disappointing. So with heavy hearts, we wish him goodbye and see you on the other side, friend. He did a lot of good stuff. So if you were never familiar with Total Biscuit, there is no better time to go up and search some of his videos and just remember the good man that was. That's all I really want to say about it. So rest in peace, Total Biscuit. You will be missed. With that, let's move on into the games. Tyler, I know you're probably sad about all this stuff we talked about in the beginning. News, that's not Tyler's bag. Episode 105, what's the deal with Tyler's shoe news hate? Remember that episode when you didn't like shoes?
Yeah,
no,
I do. That was the last episode I was on.
Yeah, two episodes ago.
What about shoes?
About that.
How about these shoes? These shoes specifically, more like boots. They have some magical properties. One could say they're pixelated. They're the boots of a man who must hunt demons of the night?
Night demons.
Bloodstained.
What is this, Blue's Clues?
See, that I understood. And now we're going to talk about Bloodstained Curse of the Night.
Thank
Curse
you.
Of the Moon.
Curse of the Moon. Yeah, this is... Tyler, just run with it, because there's so much to this.
So, Bloodstained, a very successful Kickstarter.
Tyler's been loving it.
For
the past few years.
Goodness gracious, I can't...
Iga.
Igavania.
I mean, all I know is Iga right now.
It's the very... It's the
Koji
developer.
Igarashi.
Thank you.
Yes.
He the father of the finest of Castlevanias, Kevin's favorite.
Everybody's goth daddy.
Castlevania Symphony of the Night.
Symphony of the Night. Was let go from Konami.
Yep.
And he basically turned around and what?
I'm just laughing. I'm laughing along with what you're about to say. I already think it's going to be funny. So just go for it. He
turned around and made the greatest Castlevania game of all time.
Konami really just has a history of being like, hey, great creators. Hideo, fuck you. And they're like, all right, now I'm just going to make the best thing ever and then leave and never talk to you again. Konami has a good way of shuffling out great creators.
Konami's
what did he make, Kojima?
Metal Gear.
Okay.
That was the argument there was after he left. He had made Metal Gear 5, and they tried to remove all of his name off the box. That's what I mean by Konami just generally not respecting its creators, so it's not like he got fired for being bad, it's just that he left, because Konami sucks.
Konami's like the epitome of that comic where that guy's riding his bike downhill and then shoves a stick in his own spokes.
Konami's Japanese. Konami is Japanese EA.
Yeah, yeah.
With a bigger focus on making pachinko machines. Whereas EA likes to veil their gambling under, you know, it's Star Wars first person shooter, right? Konami goes, it's just a pachinko machine, man. Drop your money and give it to us. Look, there's a Metal Gear man on the front cover of the machine. That's like actually the last thing they did with Metal Gear after Hideo left is made a pachinko machine.
Oh my God.
I think that's not a joke.
You sure they didn't make Call of Duty 4 the Phantom campaign?
That's a gun. That's a wordplay joke. I love those. So Bloodstained, not Curse of the Moon.
Right.
Bloodstained.
Ritual of the Night.
Yes.
Was the Kickstarter game.
A very fine Castlevania.
It's shaping up to be, certainly.
Yes. Igavania. Metroidvania that we will receive hopefully soon. It was slated to be released March 2017.
It looks like it's getting there. It's a spiritual successor to Symphony of the Night.
Right.
Yes.
And they're doing everything they possibly can. I'm still trying to figure out this matchmaking thing. But it's not important. What we got on May 24th was a classic style offshoot of Bloodstained.
I just want to, for those who don't have a picture in front of you, you hear about like pixel art and like indie retro games. This isn't like a stylized pixel art. This is straight up 8-bit. This looks like an NES game if you turn it on.
This looks like original Castlevania.
Yeah.
Very much so.
And it is that sort of. There are still, like, you still smash your lanterns and torches and...
Is there wall meat?
Yes. Well, no, because they don't use actual, like, turkey dinners or whatever.
Is there what?
There's hearts.
Oh, I wanted it to be meat specifically.
I know. And I wanted them to use hearts for their weapon power-ups
right.
and stuff.
That's how it goes, right?
Yeah.
You gotta make some concessions.
There is a whip. So, interesting thing about this game, you play as Zangetsu. Who I'm sure is one of the characters in Bloodstained that you meet. I think he's really important. I think he's the final boss. And I'll tell you why without spoiling anything.
Yes, be very careful with the spoilers of the new game.
So
he's evil, and in the end of the game, he goes, I'm going to be the last boss of the Kickstarter game.
Pretty much. So in Curse of the Moon, you progress through what feels like the forest outside of Dracula's castle.
Okay.
And then there's like all sorts of different styles of levels, whether it be water, sand.
It seemed to be varied in
yeah,
especially the art style too. Even though it is 8-bit, like that beginning sequence when you're walking and there's like a big train that comes flying by.
Right. It means nothing, but it scared the crap out of me.
It looks great.
Yeah, it does. If pixel art could look great, it does it well here.
If pixel art could look great, but unfortunately, it can't. Abandon your hopes and dreams, indie devs. No, I'm just kidding. Pixel art's like the best thing that's happened.
We have a great, great example of that coming up in a little bit.
Yes.
So,
Curse of the Night Moon.
Right.
Noun of the noun.
You play as this character, and after you complete the first level, you defeat the first boss. It turns out there's a soul trapped inside of him. And there's a little cutscene after, where the soul comes down and you like rescue it, and that it becomes a person, and that person is Miriam.
Ah.
So
Soul Girl.
The main character
yeah. of Bloodstained that's Ritual cool. of the Night.
Yes. That's a fun little thing.
That is very cool.
And that's cool, but so is the next part. It teaches you how to play as Miriam or Zangetsu.
Mm.
And you can switch through them with just a trigger.
Oh, like at any point?
At any point in time, no matter what. Except in, well, actually in midair too, as well.
Well, okay.
So that's pretty cool.
Okay, air combos, what's up?
Question.
Shoot.
Who Bang. Was this available for?
I got this as a Kickstarter backer. They released it they released a whole bunch of keys for it.
Was there a certain level you had to back at to get it?
I think it was the $28 level.
I think it's the one where if you were getting the actual game.
You got it.
For those,
I have this somehow. I need to look.
You should have a key for it in your email from the Kickstarter.
Not to sound like a PSA, but go into your backer kit and look for the download codes button.
The thing that I wanted to say though is that if you want to play this, because it's been heralded as like, hey, this is Castlevania. If you've been wanting 8-bit Castlevania, this is it. Since it's not the game that's coming out on Kickstarter retail, if you do want this 8-bit Castlevania thing, it is available on Steam and it will be coming on Switch. I don't know about other systems yet. I didn't look too deep into
it. It's on Xbox. It's on PS4. It's on Switch. It's on Steam.
I think right now Steam
it's
only.
It's also on Vita. Oh, no, it's PC as well.
Okay.
Like you don't need Steam.
All I'm saying is that I Googled this and then there was a Steam listing that said like 15 or 20 bucks or maybe 10 bucks. And then I wasn't sure on consoles because it wasn't appearing in any of the new game stuff. So if you want it and you didn't kickstart and you're on PC, you can at least get it. Not 100% sure if it's on other stuff. I'm sure somebody will look during this at some point, maybe give it to you at the end of the show.
Yeah, sure.
That could work. But last, before we move on, because we are going a little bit long and we want to get to this pre-E3 stuff, just final question. Tyler, is it as hard as original Castlevania, or do they dumb it down or make it easier or welcoming? And is the challenge enough? Is there like multiple difficulty levels? Is there something that you can do with that?
There are two difficulty levels. There's no life limit.
Okay.
And there's veteran, which is 3 lives.
Oh, so if you want it easy, you can have it easy. Mm-hmm. If you want it old school, you can have it old school.
The thing about that is there are lots of one-ups. There are one-ups at every 20,000 points.
Oh, there's points!
There's points.
That's good.
After you complete every stage, it saves automatically. So you can put it down and pick it back up. And after you beat it, there's a nightmare mode, which is harder. All the enemies get more attacks. They all do more damage. They're all harder to hit. There are secrets. There are lots of secrets in this game.
It generally speaking sounds like a really, really good Castlevania game and everything but the title.
How long did it take you to beat?
2 hours.
Nice.
That's okay. And this is just all I want to say real quick before we move on. This is how you do a Kickstarter.
Yep.
You see so many Kickstarters, Mud Number 9, all these other ones, they fail. Agony, as of recently, has released on Xbox and PS4. Complete broken mess. a lot of Kickstarters are looking forward to it. Horror fans are looking forward to it. Comes out as a broken mess. That's agony. This is how you do a Kickstarter. People were waiting for your game. They were getting antsy. You missed a few deadlines. Hey, why don't you...
What do you mean a few?
Many deadlines. And then you're like, hey, here's this 8-bit indie game that you weren't expecting at all. Out of nowhere. At least for me.
That is to say, not expecting anytime soon. Especially first. This is like a prequel.
Okay, I thought that this was just out of the blue, but this
was planned. What are they called? Stretch goals.
Oh, okay.
Was a classic mode game, and I figured it would just be tacked on inside of Bloodstained,
yeah, like a D-ball
across an arcade cabinet in the castle.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you can now access this in the main title.
Right.
But it's a standalone legitimate thing, and there's enough small little hints in there. There's enough dialogue to go, this is part of the story.
Mm-hmm.
This is...
I'm going to have to play it.
Oh, man. I was blown away.
I'm
going
to have to play it. If it's on Switch, when it comes out on Switch...
You know, when I was younger, everybody wanted to be like a fireman or a policeman or a doctor. I wanted to be the guy who hid the turkey in the walls.
You wanted to be Dracula. Spelled all weird. That's who you wanted to be.
Dracula, yeah. Cradle.
You wanted to be Dracula. Cradle. Spelled all weird. You were like... Cradula. Your mom came down the stairs, as most mothers do on mornings, and she was like, Kevin, baby.
I wanted to be Cradula.
What do you want to be?
Why does my mom sound like that?
For Halloween. And because that's your mom. I know your mom real good, and that's exactly how she sounds. I don't know, really. And you said, Mom, you know I've been playing a lot of this Symphony of Night. And she says, yes, boy, you spend so much of your hours in that castle. What do you want to be for Halloween? And you said, Mom, I want to be a bat. Bats are like the most basic enemy you can have called Call of Duty. Castlevania.
Castle Duty.
We're going to come back to the indie. But first, because we're running a teeny bit long, we got that good, good Call of Duty talk. Got that good, good, good Bloodstained talk. We're just going to do this real quick. I got a Switch. And we didn't talk about too much stuff at the end of last episode because I kind of want Tyler here. But since we're running long, we're just going to do this real, real fast. I beat Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze. I beat Hyrule Warriors Definitive Edition.
Nice.
And I've played Tyler's favorite, or one of his favorites. Voez. Is that how you say it?
Voez.
Yeah.
Is that on Switch?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it is.
What?
It's great fun on Switch. Both with the touch controls.
Isn't it like $30?
I think it's 20, but it comes with like a lot of songs.
Oh, I bet that's great on Switch.
It is fantastic because you do the buttons.
Right,
okay, we'll start with Voez. Voez is a very Japanese rhythm game. A lot of great songs, but it's crazy because it's almost like Guitar Hero if the field or the buttons you pressed were dynamically shifting to the sound of the music. You're kind of just tapping along with the beat. You'll hit directionals at different times. You can play with touchscreen or with Joy-Cons.
It's thumb DDR.
It is a great... It's one of those experiences where DDR forces you to be active. If DDR forces you to do that, think DDR, but you're seeing four arrows, and then those arrows are actually dots. And then all of a sudden, at a point in the song, there'll be 8 arrows. All of a sudden, now there's 2. It fluctuates, and you're just tapping in time with the music, and it results in this really enthralling, kind of surreal... If you're into rhythm games, just like this... I don't know. You're just looking and you get lost in the game.
You do.
And
you,
it's
you
just...
definitely do.
Yeah, you just kind of go on autopilot. It's a really good muscle memory kind of game. But yeah, it's fantastic. It's really good for like waiting for Hyrule Legends to load because it takes kind of a long time.
It's one of those games where you're like, dude, I'm so fucking cool. I can play music.
Yeah, for real. How Guitar Hero made you feel like you could play guitar, Voez will make you feel like you can play those crazy Japanese rhythm games you see people playing on the internet. Just real, real fast. Tyler, can you just flesh out a teeny bit about like the modes or anything? I mean, I've only played like very, very...
No, I didn't buy it.
But you played... Did you play it on mobile?
No.
I did.
Okay, fuck. Why was it... Well, because this is Tyler's game.
I don't know anything
game.
About the modes, though.
Rhythm games are my game. You're not wrong.
Yeah.
I just didn't get this one because it didn't appeal to me.
Shout out to Dave McKee, because Dave was the one who was playing this a ton a few years ago, or like last year. But yeah... Voez, great time if you're into rhythm games. And then these next two, like I said, Hyrule Warriors and Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze are remasters. I beat both of these. I did both of them co-op, which is a great time. Hyrule Warriors Definitive Edition has all the DLC, all the stuff that the 3DS and Wii U one had. I've been having a ton of fun with it. Unfortunately, there's a few hiccups with it, like in split-screen mode. certain enemies, you can kill them very quickly using a certain item. The way the split screen is cut, you can't see that icon unless you adjust your camera and look up at them, which when you're playing a Dynasty Warriors game, it's not really what you're going to be doing. But eventually you get used to it, and it's a really fun game with a lot of content. Not a lot of Warriors games, Dynasty Warriors, Monster Hunter Warriors, or whatever that one that's called. Not a lot of them have been able to keep my interest. Dragon Quest. So yeah.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, anything Warriors.
I do not like those games.
Same. Except for a few PS2 ones, Dynasty Warriors liked. Hyrule Warriors has managed to keep my interest for quite some time. Well over 20 hours.
Bought it for 3DS because it was marketed to me as a co-op game.
I heard it sucked on 3DS.
Oh god, it was terrible on 3DS. And you couldn't play co-op.
You could if it was local.
Right.
This is the best part about the Switch version is because even on the Wii U, the Wii U had some power, but it didn't have as much as it needed to be running both of these, you know, split screen with all the enemies. Switch does a good job, doesn't drop too much of a frame rate. It's very, very playable. I'm just generally speaking, we'll talk about it more at the end of the year with stacked against some of the other year's remasters. But if you like Zelda and you like hack and slash is killing a bunch of people with some tactics thrown in, you know, not micro, a little bit more of micromanaging than anything else.
Rule 34.
Why?
Lickle.
Yep. We'll just leave that one there for all of you.
Crossbows. What's wrong with crossbows?
Nothing
wrong with crossbows. Rule 34. Never bring your crossbows to a battlefield with that many girls who look like boys and boys look like girls. Because then who knows what will happen. It's just
you don't know who's going to get stuck.
You're
welcome.
Hyrule Warriors.
All right, that was episode 105.
Damn, Tyler with the zingers to end them. Yeah, Hyrule Warriors, good time. Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze. Not a lot you can say about this one besides it 100% brings the old Donkey Kong Country challenge back. It's a beautiful game, has an awesome soundtrack, and in the Switch version, you can play as Funky Kong. Which, wait for it, do either of you know about Funky Mode?
No.
So, Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze is very hard. It's not a joke. It's tough.
It's difficult.
Funky Mode is a new mode on Switch that goes, hey, you like that challenge, right? But now you're kind of regretting that challenge. You don't have as much time for games. You don't want to spend 20, 30 lives on this. But you don't want to feel like we're making it too easy. So Funky Kong has 2 extra hits of health, or 3, can't remember. He cannot get hurt by spikes because he has a surfboard, so you can land a stick on spikes. And he has a double jump that can also hover down, like how Dixie Kong can spin her hair a little bit.
Yeah.
So he is the most robust mobility-wise. He is a little bit more beefy health, and certain pitfalls cannot kill him. But in no way does Funky Kong allow you to cheese a level. You can't just like cheese things through using like ridiculous one-hit attacks. You just have a little bit more of a mobility option to fix some falls if you mess up, and you have more health to deal with enemies. And I played through entirely with Funky Kong. My co-op partner played as Dixie Kong mostly. We had a fantastic time. It was still frustrating at points, but damn, that's a good game.
That's a question.
Real good game, yes.
Was there? Of course there was, but how were the minecart levels?
Minecart levels were fun. They were
That's not a Donkey Kong game.
Yes, it is. Minecart? Donkey Kong Country is all about minecarts. Baby.
Those levels are hard.
Yeah, okay. I know. I'm just saying, if I didn't have Funky Kong on, they probably would have been hard because you get, like I said, the extra hits. There are these rocket levels where you kind of take this barrel that has a rocket. It was in Donkey Kong Country Returns as well. There's one towards the end of the game that can be kind of annoying. But generally speaking, the vehicle sections aren't that hard because there's a power-up that you can buy from the little parrot shop. Usually it's Funky who sells you, but when you're playing as Funky, it's this parrot. But it's a power-up you can buy for like 1 coin, which is easy as hell to get. Literally play any level for like 10 seconds. And it gives you like 5 hits of invulnerability, or 3 hits of invulnerability, which on a minecart level makes all the difference in the world. But yes, Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze, great time. Moonlighter, we're getting to that. Hyrule Warriors and Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze are both 60, I want to say, maybe 50. I didn't pay attention when the Walmart lady asked for my credit card. Voez is 20 on Switch, free on phones, but you have to pay for different things like songs and whatever. All 3 of the games, excellent for Switch. And as we continue this Switch talk, wrapping back around to the indies, this is one Tyler beat. Guys, usually it's Matt. I mean, usually it's me. I'm playing all the games. I'm beating all the games. People don't have things to talk about. But this time, I'm the odd one out. Tyler beat it. Kevin's deep into it. We're talking about what game, boys?
Wizard of Legend.
What Legend of Wizard? Noun of noun. It's a roguelike. We play as a wizard. And that's about the extent of my knowledge. Take it away, either of you. I don't know. Like, Tyler, you beat it. Kevin, you like it a lot, but you have your own issues with it. So,
I'm having a hard time with it. It's a great challenge. All right, so here's the deal. Wizard legend, you're a wizard. You're not a legend yet. You start out going through a museum about wizards, mm-hmm. and you learn about the Chaos Arcana, which is like powerful spells.
Real quick, because we're going to talk about Moonlighter 2, I just want to say real fast so we don't have to explain things. Roguelike in the sense for both these games where you have runs, you get resources, you bring them back. You guys know what a roguelike is. If you don't, Binding of Isaac. Binding of Isaac, Rogue Legacy, etc.
Moonlighter is way more like Binding of Isaac. However, Wizard of Legend obviously shares the same characteristics. There's a...
But both of these games have a roguelike
to them. There's a currency that persists that you use to buy things in the overworld that help you when you go into the actual dungeons.
And that's what this and Moonlighter will be. Continue, Kevin.
The way that it's set up, you can customize. There are hundreds of spells and hundreds more of trinkets that you can equip one of at the beginning. As you go through the dungeon, you can purchase more trinkets, more spells, enhanced spells. You play through two levels with mini-bosses at the end before you face one of the Order, which is an elemental wizard. Okay. It's either ice, fire, or earth. And then finally, you face the Archmage at the end. He's the big bat.
Mm-hmm. He combines all the elements, I'm assuming?
No.
Then Tyler would know.
Don't spoil it, though, Tyler, but I like that it's not that. Or maybe Tyler can tell me whether or not I should like it. Continue, Kevin.
One of the coolest parts about this game is that it's very mobility-based. You have a dash that you is your B button. It's mapped to B normally. And your dash gives you very brief iframes. I'm talking like Smash Brothers brief iframes.
Like 3 or 4 frames. Sorry, I'm sitting back so these boys have the whole floor.
Basically, you zip around the field. You cast your spells. I'll let Tyler go into detail on those and explain them to you. Take it away.
Oh, sure, yeah. So, like Kevin said, there's 128 spells. There are 5 elements with a 6th hidden element that I'm not going to spoil for Kevin. There are a mixture of air, fire, lightning, earth, and water. And water covers ice as well. Lightning or earth covers poison, so on and so forth. What's important about these? They all have different speeds, powers, and there are melee abilities. There are ranged abilities. There are very close but not melee. I mean,
a lot of options in combat.
A lot of options is what I'm getting at. Yes,
I believe you.
Now, you have your basic arcana. There's maybe like a total of 10, and you can smash these buttons. There's no cooldown. It's like punch, 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 or throw a ball, throw a ball, throw a ball, or
do a magic.
Generally in bursts of 3s. But there are certain items you can pick up, relics, that will change that maybe. Maybe you'll have 4 attacks. Maybe your basic attacks will do more damage.
Can you speak on the art style a little bit? Is it like way pixely? Is it like...
Super NES.
Okay, so 16-bit. Because, you know, the Shovel Knight has the 8-bit look.
Yeah.
But there's like 16-bit colors. Yeah. And having not seen Wizard of Legend that much, I'm still trying to see like...
You know how you can see like the outline of the dude?
Yes.
But you can also see him breathing.
Oh, okay, so it's like 32-bit or animated pixel art. That's kind of how Moonlighter is.
Yeah.
Breaking news. Tyler, I know you hate it when I interrupt you, but you won't hate it this time because we just saw this hot, hot, hot new item for one of your favorite mobile games, or was one of your favorite mobile games. Kevin, why don't you tell them what just popped up from our good friends over at Niantic.
Oh, this is not Niantic, my dude.
Not Niantic.
This is even better, although it does include that.
Okay, go.
3 minutes ago, it was actually announced, there is a new, as we all knew, was coming, a new Switch Pokemon game.
Yep.
This is the one that was rumored to be back in Kanto.
This is the one that was back in Kanto. The reason that they purchased the domains that we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Let's Go Pikachu, Let's Go Eevee.
Yes.
From what I've seen, it is going to be 4 Switch. You can play with 1 Joy-Con.
Okay, so it's Game Boy controls.
And you throw the Pokeball, just like in Pokemon Go.
Oh, fun!
You can also use a second Joy-Con to have a partner or friend join you in the game. All sorts of different things that happen, dual battles, all that. And the basic gist I'm getting is that it somehow integrates with Pokemon Go. There's gifting involved.
That's how I thought it was Niantic, because I saw a Pokemon Go thing at the end of that
tweet. There's also going to be a, what do you call it? An accessory that you can purchase that is a Pokeball that you can throw.
Didn't they have that for a Go, throw, I thought?
But like, not that I know of, no.
Oh, I was thinking of like the Pokewalker thing or the
yes, the Pokemon Plus. And it is coming out. I'm sorry. It's only saying that the Pokeball. Oh, no. Okay. Both the game and the accessory are coming out November 16th.
And this is called Hey You Pikachu or Hey.
This is called Let's Go Pikachu and Let's Go Eevee.
Interesting. New Pokemon RPG. What people have been wanting. More about that at E3. But back to Wizard of Legend. Let's wrap this up. Tyler. Continue. Well, we were talking about the art style. You're talking about all the items and stuff. Some of the things that I heard about this game, and maybe Kevin could speak on it too, what's kindled the fire here, is that it was a cool idea that maybe lacked some of the finer polish in the middle, or needed to be worked on in some ways. Maybe it's the combat. I don't know exactly. But was there anything, Tyler, that you felt was lacking from the experience that maybe a more fleshed out or prestigious, one could say, roguelike had down? And Kevin, to that point as well. Tyler, continue.
So,
without having played the roguelike, with Binding of Isaac, you play it and then you're like, oh, I like this loop. Sometimes roguelikes miss a loop. They don't have a certain aspect, et cetera, et cetera. This Legend game sounds good. It sounds like a lot of wizarding love. But what's wrong with it? Why isn't everyone talking about it?
Well, first of all, it's fucking hard.
Okay.
It's very hard.
It's Nintendo hard.
If it's fucking hard, then it's probably too hard for a mainstream audience. Like, Binding of Isaac is just... Oh, it's pretty freaking hard.
It's a little harder than that.
Okay, that's fucking hard.
Like, Binding of Isaac I've beaten multiple times. Wizard of Legend, I've probably logged close to 20 or 30 hours, and I don't think I've beaten the third order wizard, which is level, what, 9? Right?
Technically 7, 8, 9, yeah.
Yeah. So, like, you know, you fight mini-boss, big wizard, mini-boss, mini-boss, big wizard, mini-boss, mini-boss, big wizard.
So you failed to even reach level 10.
Correct. I've gotten to the final wizard once, not the big guy, the third of the order, once, and died instantly.
So besides the difficulty?
It doesn't have the loops. It doesn't have... So Isaac did something really cool with their win condition, I suppose.
Yeah.
When you defeat Mom, it unlocks something else.
It like continues the loop. Let's say, for example, like you have
it
10 weapons.
It extends the loop.
You have 10 weapons to choose from. Once you beat, now you have 30 weapons and a new kind of room. And then that continues and continues and continues as they build it out.
So you could get the first 120 weapons without even being the game in this game.
Is it a victim of just being not as fleshed out and a bit early?
No. If you ground it out...
Inherently like, the game.
What do you mean?
As in, like, could they patch the stuff and add in things? Or is it just how the game works out?
I don't think so. I mean... Okay, so, yes,
we're
they could.
Deep into it now.
Now, I would say, because it's only water, fire, earth...
Yes.
If and when they decide to add the two other elements as chancellors, that's the big wizards that Kevin's talking about, that would make it more interesting. Being that, like, you could do three random elements, not always fire, water, or earth, not in that order. It's never in that order.
I'm just waiting for someone to make the wind, earth, fire.
There's already people all over the subreddit doing avatar builds and stuff like that.
Okay.
Like, you can do... Because it is. It's
Earth. Go planet.
Yeah.
So, if they made it so that when you defeated the final boss and you could play 15 levels before you fought the final boss, and then that was something, that would probably be the only patch you could do.
So maybe this is kind of a roguelike for those who don't like the whole dying over and over and over and over building the loop.
This is not the game for you, then.
Okay, so how about, let's just say, if you're looking for a challenge and the roguelike genre interests you, take a peek at Wizard of Legend. It is on Switch, it is on Xbox, PS4,
and Steam.
Assuming on PC, yeah.
I would like to say that I'm a big fan of Binding of Isaac. I've logged a lot of time on Binding of Isaac.
Samesies.
92 hours. Think I like this better.
That is a big thing to say, but okay, I'll have to play it then. I think we'll come back at the end of the year potentially.
They're
depending.
They're different games at their core, but if I had to pick one over the other, I think I would pick Wizard of Legend.
I like Bullet Hells, and I think I like Bullet Hells more than the rest of you. Honestly,
yeah,
I think you do. Not a big fan. I think I would come close, but you definitely know more and play them better.
That's the reason I like Isaac. I like Isaac because it's original Zelda dungeon bullet hell.
Yeah,
that's it. It scratches the itch for both me and Tyler.
Were you gonna finish that? Because I had something that occurred to me.
Oh, I mean, other than I had one more thing to say about Wizard of Legend.
A current last closer, and then we'll move on to another rogue. Yeah. Like briefly,
the combat is similar in my mind. Granted, I didn't play it, but I watched you play it. Seems like Fury, in a way.
Fury has a lot of weight to it.
Yes. Fury being one-on-one, whereas this is Legions.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so far as five, maybe six dudes at a time. At max. I mean, we're talking like if you go up against one guy, you better run for a little while and chip away at him.
And watch his patterns.
Yeah.
Things like that.
Learn.
I more meant like the dashing mechanism.
Yes. True.
Yeah.
You can't charge your dash like you can in Fury. Your dash does make you minorly invulnerable, but you can dash straight into something.
I heard it's like a hyper light drifter in the dashing.
Or
it has that kind of like chaining them together if you want.
Yeah, you can get a maximum of four, well, at least three dashes with
the
flash.
That's kind of hyper was. Yeah.
I mean, two normally.
So can we recommend this? Tyler sounds like he loves it. Yeah.
So I wanted to go back to the loop thing real quick. Looping back to the loop.
Yeah.
To close that loop, when you beat the game, you get a relic, and relics are what really alter the game for you. They give you additional abilities on hit, or they give you defenses or what have you. But the last relic that you get makes the game harder, and that's it. Kevin, stage 3, 7, 8, and 9, it makes the entire game that difficult.
Yeah,
it's that lead up, that difficulty curve, I guess, is that third section is where the hike comes in.
Sorta, yeah.
I feel like everyone.
I think the whole game is difficult. It's just level 3 is difficult
when it becomes like, oh, this is when shit get real now.
Yeah, so you better have a good build or some relics to back you up. This is gonna get painful.
Wizard of Legend is available now. You can get it for 15, 20, something like that, right?
15.
16.
That's a tax for you, baby.
No, it's no tax. That's before tax, so it's like 17, 24.
You can get it for under $20 if you're interested. Check it out. Let's talk about this real quick, Kevin.
Yeah.
Moonlighter.
We can go into detail later.
Yeah, because we'll have plenty of time to play with it. I only played like 4 or 5 rounds.
I played a lot of it.
Okay, let me just... We did go long on Wizard. Moonlighter's cool, but there's a lot of stuff to it, and I think if we do an in-depth, we won't have time
for
pre-E3.
Dive.
So let's just give the overall story. You play as Will. He runs the Moonlighter, which is a general store. He's the last in his line of family of merchants. Outside of the town where he has a general store, there is a series of dungeons. Most merchants go in there, they get some loot, they escape with their pendant, which allows them to, like, magically teleport back to the town, and they sell their wares for the rest of the day. Will really wants to find out what's behind this fifth mystical door that no one's ever been able to reach. He wants to go further into the dungeon, but his grandpa is like, no, you should stay, you should sell your stuff. So what you do in this game is you go into the dungeon at night, you collect goods, you try to progress, but you try to get out without dying because you want that loot to then go back to the town. And during the day, you set up shop and you sell them. And that is its own gameplay thing within it, because as you get new items, you have no clue what the market value is, what the supply and demand is. So you put them out there on your shelf, you set prices, you look at the reaction of customers and see if that's what they like, mm-hmm. if they love it, if it's a great deal, if they hate the price.
Right.
And generally, you just go off that. You have a whole book that shows you all the prices that you've set before.
I love that feature.
Et cetera, et cetera. So you don't
tells you a little bit more about the item, too.
You don't have to keep all of those numbers in your head. And that's essentially the loop. And then the money you get from profiting off the stuff, you spend on different weapons and armors and different things as you can build new shops or have shops be built in the town by checking out this billboard. So essentially, that's the loop. Go in the dungeon. Get as far as you can, kill, come back, sell the stuff, repeat as you grow stronger over time.
I think it functions in three major ways, and this is really my piece to say on it before we go into our deep dive next time.
Yes.
It functions in three major ways in that I would argue that each way is robust as the others. So there's the dungeon delve.
Yes.
There's the inventory management, which I don't know how deeply you got into that yet, but I'll add to this in a second.
Mm.
And then there is the shopkeeping. The inventory management seemed normal at first, like, you know,
just throw, you know, move stacks,
you know, decide if you want to keep those twigs or if you want the golem core or something like that.
And then it becomes kind of like Resident Evil 4.
A little bit difficult because when you put it in the bag, the item has an arrow pointing towards another slot in your bag and it will destroy that item that it's pointing at. If you don't arrange it properly.
Now, that's not universal. Different items might have different things. So say you pick up like a piece of stone. That's just fine. It can sit in your bag. You pick up something that's a little bit rarer. Maybe this one has to be at the bottom of the bag or left or the right side of the bag.
Yep.
And then an even rarer thing, like Kevin said, hey, this is going to destroy whatever item is in a sector above in your inventory. So you have to
put it all the way to the top.
What this means is that if you like the dungeon crawling like combat of Isaac, Binding of Isaac, and that's what you like, that's good, but you're still going to have to like the idea of setting prices, kind of, you know, finagling and haggling with customers and stuff, and you're going to have to like that small inventory management. I'd say the inventory management is the least pervasive of the three.
Yeah, it is not that.
But combat and selling things are two very large parts of the game, and you cannot ignore one or the other. You have to be okay with both of them.
And there's something kind of thrilling about placing an item on the shelf for the first time for sale and trying to guess what the cost is. Because
yes.
It's funny because they have these little speech bubbles that pop up, like Matt was saying earlier. You watch their faces. And the speech bubble does one of four things. Either it's like really sad because you priced it way too high, or it's like, okay, it's a little expensive, but I'll buy it. Or it's like, hey, this is a great deal. Or it's like money, like literally like coins.
You're selling this way too low.
And you hear this noise that's like, ching, and you're like, oh, shit.
That means I sold an item that should have been 500 gold for 20 because I undersold. Yeah, it's got this fun little reactive thing. And as we cap off this discussion, because we'll need a deep dive, there's two things that stand out to me about this game. One I like, one I don't like. The thing I like is the art style. The art style is super stylized. Not super stylized. It's very high pixel count pixel art, but it's animated super well. So like Tyler was saying earlier, you can see the character kind of breathing in Wizard of Legend. That is this game Moonlighter, but with everything. So if there's like a curtain that's sitting in the town, you're seeing every ripple of it. It's very, very well animated pixel art. The flip side is the combat. The combat is tough, but not because it's super reactive. It's because it almost feels a teeny bit clunky.
Yes.
I don't particularly like it that much, but I can stomach it. And as you like upgrade your weapons, maybe there's gonna be some more combos, some different like room clearing stuff. But the way the combat works out right now, it feels kind of stilted. And like I said in Wizard of Legend talk, enemies don't die in one hit unless they're like a little jelly. So you have to hit enemies three or four times. You have to dodge, and it doesn't always feel too great. I do like they put the dodge on the trigger so you can attack and all that stuff at the same time.
But I actually completely remapped my buttons because I could not stand that setup. But I will admit, having delved into the combat a little bit deeper, I've actually gotten to the second dungeon already.
Okay, I have not beat the first dungeon.
Having delved into the combat a little bit deeper, I've built... Does it matter if I spoil weapon? Like, it's not weapons, it's the base weapon.
You have, build. Like, swords and shields and bows fists and arrows and yeah,
things. Great swords. Well, I built the fists, and I built the bow, and then I still have the sword and shield that you start with. I think the combat's just designed to be difficult, because some things work really well in certain scenarios. Like, there's a second dungeon where there's a lot of, like, in the first one there's rocks, in this one there's stumps. With the arrow, if you use the special attack, you can shoot over them, so you can kind of cheese it a little bit.
There's a bit of strategy to it, is what we're saying.
So the combat is actually designed to be a little bit clunky, I think, because even the fists are supposed to be a faster weapon, but the first punch will not connect until the physical movement shows. It's not like as soon as you hit it connects. There's like a grace period before your character actually physically hits the creature.
Yes.
That being said, it is mildly infuriating. Also, it chugs when there's a lot of enemies on screen.
I haven't seen that yet, but I
so
have
I hope
seen
some performance.
I have seen some frame rate drops. We will deep dive. We'll talk about it towards the end of the year as well for Game of the Year stuff. It's good. It looks good. It plays well. It has a good mixture of ideas. There's some few issues I have with it, and we'll see whether or not those issues become alleviated as we play more. Tyler, this is a game I think would be up your alley.
This, like, the way you guys are describing it, this sounds annoying and boring.
Do you not like the general store aspect of it?
I don't know. I don't like guessing wrong. I hate being wrong.
I think
but you make an educated guess after you take a brief initial guess. It's like Price is Right.
Yeah, it's kind of like you have vines, you have rocks. If you have 10 of them in a stack and you found 10 of them, you can assume that they're not going to be like, you know, more than 5 or 10 gold. I will agree with you in the beginning when you have like 20 items in your inventory and you only have seen one item priced. It is kind of annoying to sit there for a while, but once you get past the first 3 or 4 days and you have a set idea of kind of what everything in the dungeon, or at least what most things in the dungeon should look like, you can I usually throw something at 100, and if somebody gawks at that, I throw it back down to 20, and if someone goes, oh, what a deal, I put it to 50.
The way that it works, your diary will show you the item itself, and then it'll give you a list of all 3 or 4 of those reactions, and then list the dollar amount that reaction occurred, so you can zero in on what that actual price is. It's not just like a shot in the dark.
That also does change with supply and demand.
Yes.
So Tyler is right in saying that there is some guesstimation going on, and that is a big part of the game. Like I said, you have to like both parts of it.
Yeah.
So I would be interested to see you play it and see whether or not you find that stuff interesting at all. Towards the end of the year, maybe we'll have you, when we're just all sitting around catching up on games, have you play it for 20 minutes.
I want to throw it out there. This game needs to be on Switch. It's going to be on Switch. This game is absolutely made for a Switch. Like,
early runs are like 10 minutes, and selling stuff is like 5-10 minutes. It's great for just picking up very quickly.
Yep.
Whereas some other roguelikes can get a bit longer as the runs get on. We'll talk about that more.
It's hard not to. That's why we keep saying we're going to talk about it more, but we keep talking about it.
A lot of cool things.
It's very cool.
A lot of cool ideas. Very unique concept. These last two, let me just hit them real quick. Sega Genesis Classics. It's a collection of 30 Genesis games. It doesn't have Sonic the Hedgehog 3, which is weird, probably because of the music. I don't know why it doesn't have Sonic. It does have all the Golden Axes, all the Streets of Rage games, every other Sonic game, Altered Beast, pretty much all the really good Sega Genesis games that you want. Gunstar Heroes, all these things, Phantasy Star. What it isn't is a celebration, like Rare Replay or anything. Basically, you go into the game, you're sitting in this very 90s kid's bedroom, you can set the time of day, you know, there's Sega posters on the wall, and you basically have a Genesis there, a bunch of carts, and you pick, pop it in, you can rewind, you can fast forward, you can save state, you can choose some of the stuff within the emulation itself, like how it's displayed. There's some achievements and some challenges, but beyond that, it's literally just those games, the rewind feature, the kind of unlockable artwork you might be expecting, it's not there. Any explanations on the games? That was my biggest issue. When you're looking at the game list, it's like these spined cartridges without their boxes. So you can see the name, Altered Beast, and if you pick it up, and you put it in, it just starts. You don't know what genre it is. You don't know a summary of the game. And with 30 games, some of them aren't as popular as others. I would have liked to see, like, RPG or beat 'em up or the back of the box that explains what it is.
Yeah.
You have no idea of what it is before you go in, which, you know, leads you to try everything at least once. But at the same time, I don't want to start an RPG when I just want to play something quick. And if I don't know what something is, I'm going to more likely just go back to Golden Axe or Streets of Rage and not find those really cool gems that stick out in these kind of collections. So it's presented kind of shit. There are cool features, and there's a lot of great games. And for the asking price of, I think it's 30, at a dollar a game, that's pretty good. If it's higher, I guess it depends on how much you like Sega Genesis. But it does have local co-op. It also has online co-op for like Streets of Rage and stuff, which I have not been able to get into a match yet because I've sat in matchmaking for over 10 minutes and nothing has happened. So, the achievements are kind of fun. It like forces you to do challenges. So beat this boss with only this weapon, or, you know, beat the first level of Streets of Rage with only taking one hit, et cetera, et cetera. It's a cool thing. Not everything I was looking for. Honestly, the Xbox 360 game Sega or Sonic's Ultimate Genesis Collection was far better. But if you want Genesis games on your Xbox One, your PS4, or your Switch, or your PC, I think Switch, I might be wrong on that, you can get it. It's out. And then finally, Detroit Become Human. I finished this up. You can go look at my review on a90skid.com if you want my full thoughts on it. But generally speaking, David Cage games, Beyond Two Souls, Heavy Rain, Indigo Prophecy, have always promised these branching storylines. You know, things that we've seen from Telltale games, like, hey, if you say something here, that might change how this character thinks about you. Detroit Become Human is the only game that I've ever seen actually work on those, in the idea that something you say to a character could cause their death 3 chapters down the line. If that character dies, you can have a completely different ending. All of your choices definitely have an effect on the story. All of the things you do, the way you decide to take your characters can be varied. You can have people be one character in specific without spoiling. You can have him be just a sour, evil person who takes lives, doesn't care, or a super compassionate, loving kind of person. And that is completely dependent on your situations, moral decisions you have to make. And as far as a Heavy Rain-esque game, not too many quick time events, a lot of really good dialogue. I was blown away by the graphics. And as I updated the Game of the Year nominees we currently have, let me tell you guys, best graphics of 2018 are going to be tough.
I saw a single clip earlier and it kind of gave me some Uncanny Valley feelings.
Detroit Become Human is the closest we can get. Whereas L.A. Noire did the direct face capture, felt weird because you were looking at real actors.
Yeah.
This is the weird in that I know these actors because they are rendered so well.
Wow.
Not because it's a direct, like, render of their face. Yeah, it looks really good, and it delves into some really dark territory. So in my review, I likened it to a really, really messed up version of Black Mirror at times. Mm. If you like the idea of Westworld, you like this whole androids, what is humanity? Is technology too are we reliant on technology too much, et cetera, et cetera. These kind of tropes are in the game. It does a lot of sci-fi themes that we've seen before, but it does them interesting ways and has a cool story with a lot of fun characters. Some of them are insufferable, but then again, there's plenty of bad characters and great stories. Give it a try if you like the idea of these Telltale, your choices affect the game, end quote, genre. That is all I have to say on that. As I look at this list, we have covered it well. We're almost done with the show, guys. Before we wrap up, before we get to the game fact, before we get to the plugs and all that, pre-E3. Pre-3? You guys remember pre-3?
Pre-3.
You guys remember pre-3? It's the show we do before pre-3. Before we're E3, which is Electronic Entertainment Expo in Los Angeles. Let me bring up my calendar real quick. We're not going to do the standard pre-3. Usually it's like a whole episode. If you missed last week's episode, Canada kind of spoiled a lot of it.
Way to go, Canada.
So Canadian Walmart spoiled a lot of stuff. Some of it's been confirmed, some of it has not. But the whole prediction thing at this point is just going to be us reiterating things. We got, starting on Saturday, June 9th at 2 p.m. is EA, EA's press conference. And then Tuesday, June 12th is Nintendo E3, or Nintendo's press direct, whatever, at noon. In between then, we have Microsoft, Bethesda, Square Enix, Ubisoft, Sony. All of those companies will be coming out saying what they're doing in the years coming forward, as they always do at E3. We've seen all this stuff. We've seen all this stuff that's been leaked. We talked about Bethesda. We talked about what Fallout we'd want to see. I think we've spoken at length about kind of what we'd want from Bethesda. Is there one thing? Let's make just a leap. You know,
yeah.
One thing from each person that you would want to see. It can be a game that's already been announced. We finally see gameplay. It can be a surprise release date. It can be a brand new game. Just anything you would want from any of these companies. I'm just trying to give you guys an open kind of space here, but I know it's tough with so many things coming out. I'll start. This is something that's been rumored, but Microsoft, everybody thinks they're going to do a Cloverfield 3. That they're going to do a Xbox One S. And what I mean by that is at the end of their conference, they're going to be like, hey, this thing we just announced comes out right now. Everyone's saying that it'll probably be Crackdown 3 on Game Pass. That is the sort of thing I want, and not just from Microsoft. I would love it if I could cap off my E3 by playing something I saw. This is something we saw at old E3s. I most remember Xbox 360 Lost Planet was a game they announced. I was like, wow, it looks awesome. And they went, you can download the demo literally right now. And I downloaded the demo, I played it, and I was playing the same thing that people were playing on the E3 show floor. Awesome for me. So I really am looking forward to something like that. Somebody want to give me a cool Nintendo thing? Because I have some Nintendo thoughts that I'd like
to know. I got a Sega one that I'd like to see.
Yeah, Sega.
Yeah, I want to see the gritty reboot of everybody's favorite Blue Hedgehog.
You missed it. It's called Shadow the Hedgehog.
Well, and he grows up and he runs a bar and he starts to investigate the murder of Amy. It's called Gin and Sonic.
Because of... When did his drinking problem begin? Was it the reason Amy died? Because he got a little bit too drunk one night and he blacked out and then he went too fast past her?
Gotta go fast.
With a fist.
Had to go fast.
Jesus Christ. Rule 34, huh? I guess. The Sonic fan base loves that. Nintendo. Guys, just announce Animal Crossing.
Yeah.
Just fucking do it. Just
well,
do
now
it.
We know they're going to announce... I mean, they already did, but they're probably going to go into detail about Let's Go...
Whatever. Let's Go Pikachu, Metroid Become Human. Metroid
Become
4.
Human.
As the Backstreet Boys once said, and still say, now on Las Vegas' stage, I don't know if you guys saw that, the Backstreet Boys reunion tour.
No.
In Las Vegas only. But as those boys have long said, and will continue to say, Nintendo, I beg of you, quit playing games with my heart. With my heart. I should have known from the start. You guys.
Reggie.
My body is ready. Give me that Animal Crossing for your switchy little portable. Tyler, close out this pre-3 if you can for us. If there was one thing on this godforsaken earth where we could be happy for once when it comes to video games.
If you need a few more seconds, I will say
I'm just like, hey, what's your video game dream?
I am excited for Borderlands 3.
Yeah, Randy Pitchford has come out and said time and time again, it's not going to be announced at E3. And then this Canadian leak that had Rage 2, which was then confirmed, had Borderlands 3 on it.
Twist, Rage 2 is Borderlands 3.
If they don't announce Borderlands 3, Rage 2 will take it. Yeah. Rage 2 will take that. Tyler, I fully understand if you have nothing. Okay, then here's...
Here's the thing.
You look angry.
I am.
Oh.
Here's the thing. When the Mega Man X collection was announced next to Mega Man 11, you don't need anything else when you're me.
Yeah, you've already been. I actually just added that to my my calendar. I think when is that?
We didn't talk about it. I don't know why we didn't talk about it. Mega Man 11,
Mega Man Genesis or Mega Man X collection 1 and 2, they're going to be splitting that up $20 a piece, $40 if you buy the cart on Switch, but the cart will only have the first 3. The first collection has Mega Man X 1, 2, 3, and the second,
no, 4 is also included on the first one.
Okay, and then 5 is the one that has like PS2 and
5, 6,
the PS1
and 7
mm-hmm.
and 8.
And then Mega Man 11. Hoo-wee! That looks like what my number 9 should have been. Shoulda, woulda, coulda.
It looks good. It looks real good.
October 2nd on PS4 and probably all the others.
October 2nd, baby. And that was it, Mega Man?
Mega Man 11 in the Double Gear system.
Okay, and then the X Collection I think is a little bit before that, either August or...
I think it's August.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it in the calendar. I lied. August. I do have your wedding in my calendar, baby! That's going to be a fun time for all. Guys, I guess here's the question that I think Tyler could easily answer. If you think there's one, who do you think is going to win? Between Nintendo, Sony, and Microsoft right now, Microsoft needs the games. Sony needs to show me that Days Gone isn't going to be garbage. And Nintendo, they just need to announce a few things that people have been holding out for. F-Zero, I don't know, is an Animal Crossing. But who do you think will win this one? Because as we know, you won't be right. But in 3 years, oh boy, you're going to be.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. So we've heard absolutely nothing from Xbox.
Yeah, who's going to win?
So Xbox is probably going to win. That's just Tyler logic talking.
No, but it makes sense.
Nintendo will be the shining star this year, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Just with releasing Pokemon, anything.
Nintendo has been killing it.
Nintendo will be that really popular kid in high school that nobody really hated because they're just so goddamn nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
You.
That what? Is Kevin.
No.
Kevin was such a nice boy back in high school when I didn't know him.
There's a little bit more detail on the Pokemon release thing, the hot take we had.
Yeah, do that real quick, and then we'll wrap up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's an all-new core series Pokemon RPG title in development for the second half of 2019, in addition to Let's Go Pikachu.
Okay, because I was hoping they had said that they were going to do a standard, like, core RPG for Pokemon, and then when you said that, I was like, oh, I hope that's not what they meant.
Yeah, phoning it in.
I want it to be, like, a Pokemon Red remake or something awesome. Because the rumor is that Pokemon game will only have the first 151.
Yo.
So this Let's Go Pokemon, Pikachu, Let's Go Eevee. You guys do realize what that is, right?
Is it what?
It's Ash and Gary.
Oh shit, you're right. I didn't think about that.
So like
that's a really good ramp up to do a remake of Red and Blue.
Oh shit.
You pick Let's Go Eevee and you're playing as fucking Blue, guys.
Well, at least in the video. You probably are you a boy or a girl? You know.
Yo, I just I played Pokemon Moon. Yo, listen, I played Pokemon Moon, all right? And I haven't played Pokemon since Pokemon Blue. And I beat Pokemon Moon. And I was like, come on, fucking damn, that's a good one. That's a good Poke adventure. I had all these monsters in my pocket. Anyone I wanted to throw out there, lock it. It was great. Top tier Pokemon experience. If they can bring that experience to the Switch with Switch graphics.
Oh my God.
And it's Pokemon Red and Blue. It's like me wanting to throw up because I'm so excited that I don't have it, and me kind of holding back my anticipation. Anyways, guys, E3 is going to be tons of fun. This episode should be coming out a little bit before E3, maybe like the weekend of, and then our next episode, we will talk all about E3, as well as a few games that we've been playing. I will be playing The Council Episode 2, which we got from Evolve PR, so I have to play it for them, and also the new first-person exploration game available on Xbox One, PS4, and Switch coming out in June, June 15th, I believe, or maybe June 5th, Shape of the World. I will be playing on Switch, so we'll talk about that as well as all the E3 happenings. Before Kevin gives us that spicy game fact, and you guys will want to stick around, it's a good one, let's plug a few things. First off, my chair is so creaky today. It's probably going to sound like farts coming over. It wasn't, guys. It's my wooden chair. If you want to talk to us, if you want to reach out to us, you can email us like adults at sgc64mail@gmail.com. If you want to talk to us on social media, like, you know, adults as well, you can find us on Twitter. The show Twitter is @supergamecast64. But if you want to talk to me personally, I am @sgc64. Matt.
I'm @gingerbeard_man, beer like the beverage.
I am @tremalio.
If you want, and you want to be nice to us because Tyler, you know, Tyler's got that review robot and he hasn't been getting a lot of love. Leave us a 5-star review on iTunes or any star. Just tell us what you think. Leave something funny in your review, and the review robot 2K12 3000 will read it. Bleh, we'll read it live off the air, live on the air. I can't talk, guys. We're running like a 1:30, an hour and 30. Plugs for other shows that we love. We got Choose My Own Adventure. Our good friend Mark and his fam.
His crew.
They do a cool D&D style.
It's a real play podcast that's dictated by the listeners.
So check that out. If you like anime stuff, listen to Shonen Trash. That's a wonderful podcast full of comedy goofs where they look at one specific anime series each episode. That is hosted by our friends Vince, Kevin, and Lauren. So give that a listen. Also, if you want, you can ask them questions on their recording days on Sunday by using the hashtag #ShonenAsks. And finally, like Kevin mentioned at the beginning of the show, I was guest host on Almost Better Than Silence, a wonderful video game show that is hosted by Douglas Coleman and friends. It was a great time. They asked me about Super Gamecast, how we got to going, all about what we do here, our history, and then what games we've been playing. So we talked about God of War, Detroit.
It's a good interview. You should check it out. Also, it's fun to listen to Matt have to, like,
actually work. Be an adult.
Yeah. Yeah, like work professionally. It's fun.
You guys get the mat that most people get.
Also, I want to throw it out there. Douglas is a fantastic interviewer.
Oh, it
he
was.
Really, he did a good job. He did a really good
job. It was a blast. Everybody, Doug, Bren, Whitney, you guys were all wonderful to be with on the show. I will definitely be back on that show for maybe a Detroit Become Human spoiler cast. Maybe some stuff further down the line. We will see. But before we bid you adieu, Kevin always got to hit us with those spicy topical this time.
I got two actually that are very topical.
It's the doubles.
We were talking about Castlevania. And the first one is kind of one that it's not that surprising. The first...
Did you know that Alucard is Dracula?
The first...
Did you know?
...thing in every Castlevania game that you fight. Tyler, can you tell me what that is? The first hallway of every Castlevania game.
Zombies.
It's the same. It's the same thing every time.
Is it
a hallway full of zombies.
Okay. Always. Yeah. I thought it was either a zombie or it was a floating singular bat.
Nope. It's so zombies every time.
They did the same thing in Bloodstained as well.
Yep. It's a zombie?
Curse of the Moon.
It's a callback to every other Castlevania game.
It's not a zombie, but it moves like and looks like a zombie sludge monster.
In Castlevania Symphony of the Night, isn't the end of the first hallway when you fight like the first griffin guy?
No.
Or the big wolf?
You fight the wargs, yeah. The wargs are there. But
so, in Castlevania Symphony of the Night, the first hallway you run through is wargs. You do... just blow right through them, and you end up in the next hallway, which is your first play.
Yep,
which is zombies.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. What's the second game fact? Because that was a nice one.
This one is crazy. This one.
Get ready to blow your top five game facts.
Make sure your buckles are secure and that thing that goes over your shoulder is in good place, because you might fall off the roller coaster I'm about to take you on. All right. So
hold on to your butts.
Strap in, boys.
What do you guys think Castlevania has to do anything at all with Game of Thrones?
Is this like the 9 degrees of Kevin Bacon, but with Game of Thrones to Castlevania? They had similar composers, is what I'm going to throw out there as a big guess.
Do you have a guess?
It's actually a really good guess.
It is a good guess, but it's wrong.
This is why I did so horribly in school.
So
bad test taker.
All of Westeros and Essos are the upside down castle of Earth.
No. Because I didn't actually study. I guess on all my tests.
Okay, so... Dothraki is a language used in George R. R. Martin's Song of Ice and Fire.
Yeah.
This motherfucker about telling me Dothraki came from Castlevania.
Not really. so the Game of Thrones TV show people hired linguists to create the new language of Dothraki and High Valyrian for them.
Uh-huh.
The Valyrian language specifically was created by David J. Peterson and was given free reign to create the language as he saw fit.
Uh-huh.
And as a big fan of Castlevania games... he managed to include a reference in High Valyrian.
What is it?
Do you have any guess as to what the word for chain might be in High Valyrian? Let me see if you're going to guess Belmont, you're right.
I was going to do Belmont, but some variation of it.
Yep.
Really?
Yeah. How cool is that?
That's pretty sweet.
That's one of my favorite game facts I've done.
That is, and you know what? It just, I love the idea of creating languages. That is.
Pachinko machines.
Yeah. Sorry. Oh my Sorry. God. Don't even mention it. Konami is a bad company. They're a bad company, like EA is a bad company. And I don't want to say the games industry would be better without them, because they do drive a lot of the industry. But maybe the creatives should take a break.
I miss Contra.
yes. Guys, thank you so much for joining us on this slightly longer than usual, but kind of normal to what we used to do, episode of Super Gamecast 64. We had a blast talking about all these Switch games. Thank you so much, Tyler, for being on the show. We always love to have you here filling out the crew. Thanks again, Kevin, for the spicy game facts and the hot Moonlighter knowledge. So much stuff we talked about. Guys, once again, if you like the show, please tell a friend. We don't really advertise. We don't spend any money to do that. Shout us on our Twitter. If you have any of your own E3 predictions, be sure to tweet at us, and that's at SuperGamecast64. Until next time, y'all, you have now leveled up again, I think. This is episode 4 of season 4, yeah? Yeah, right? We're episode
105.
It takes so long to get... from level 3 to 4, so I don't know about...
You think at this point, like, then this is when the experience is starting to ramp up, so maybe they only, like, earned half a bar on this one?
Right, that's what I'm talking about.
Okay, so you're like halfway there.
But this is a long episode, so maybe 130, maybe 97 experience points?
And that's funny enough, because actually there's a side quest where if you tweet at us with your E3 predictions, you do gain a full level. But I'm not saying if you want to get these imaginary points for yourself, I'm just saying that's an option you have. All right, guys, thanks so much for listening. As always, you have leveled up, and we will see you next time. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Well, that's how I usually do a salute.